Join the show now at 877-326-3255. That's 877-3-COFALL. This is the Dan Kofal Show.
Do I seem too harsh with the CDC? Do I? I must.
I think we're both a little bit harsh, but I don't know. I wouldn't say excessively harsh.
Well, let me read another quote from the CDC. I can't help this. The hypocrisy is just driving me crazy. They were talking about the flight that this Duncan, this patient took, the flights he took from Africa over to the United States, going through Brussels, going through Washington, D.C., back to Dallas. It says, while the CDC clearly states that it is unnecessary for it or the airline to contact others and passengers who were on the patient's flight, United is providing information about the flights United believes the patient took. What a bunch of horse crap. Based on information provided by the CDC, the airline said, they suggest that any customer who has concerns contact the experts at the CDC for further information. Little do they customers know that the CDC said you didn't need to be contacted in the first place.
That's right. You're not a big fan of the CDC, are you, Dan?
I'm not a big fan of anybody who tells one group of people one thing and one group of people another, especially because I have to work really hard to go find this information. Americans shouldn't have to work as hard as I work to go find it. It should be on the TV and the radio and shared with everybody equally.
I want to say there's a good bit of stuff that we put out there, information and whatnot, that it's the only place in DFW to get any of this. Nobody's talking about this stuff the way we are.
I think that's exactly right. And we can only deal with information that's publicly available.
Right.
But, you know, we do our best to find that information out. And the lunacy of the CDC saying, no, United, you don't need to tell those passengers. If I were a United passenger, which I'm not, and I was sitting next to that Ebola patient and you didn't call me and I potentially had contracted Ebola and I was carrying it and I went home and hugged my kids and kissed my wife and hung out with my family and friends and then found out I got Ebola and you didn't tell me that I might have it, you are very, very bad people. And there's a special place in hell for you people.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, welcome back to the Dan Kofal Show. DanKofal.com, 877-326-3255 is the website and the ways to contact us. You can listen to us on TalkStreamLive.com, on Red State Talk Radio at 11 p.m. till 1 a.m., and also iHeartRadio and also KFXR 1190 here in Dallas. And we appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much for joining us. We got a great cast of guests today, so let's get to our next one. We're gonna break from the all Ebola coverage today. We're gonna talk to my friend Lloyd Chapman. He is founder and president of the American Small Business League. He founded the Small Business League in 2002. He wanted to stop the diversion of federal small business contracts to large corporations. He's been extremely successful with that. They've been instrumental in prompting the removal of 600 large firms from federal and state federal small business databases. I don't want to get too complex here, but there are incentives that a government provides, and this is one of the problems with the government providing an incentive. And the system has corrupted itself. It's been corrupted, where though these incentives are being picked up by companies that are not in need and that are not small businesses, and obviously to the detriment of small businesses. It's always good having Lloyd on. Hi, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing? I have to say, how can there possibly be hypocrisy in a federal agency?
Yeah,
that's never happened before.
Exactly. Again, so let me get this straight. We don't trust the administration. We don't trust Congress. We don't trust the Small Business Administration. We don't trust anybody when it comes to business with the federal government. And all of a sudden, we're supposed to trust the Center for Disease Control.
Right.
I don't get it.
I think Thomas Jefferson said something very similar to that.
Did he? Yes, he did. All right, Lloyd, I want to change subject a little bit to give our listeners a change of pace. Today, the labor report came out, and on the surface, market went up, gold went down, everything went the way it's supposed to until you look below the surface and you find out two big facts. Number one, that almost 93 million Americans are not in the labor force. That number keeps going up. It's at an all-time 36-year low, and that's what makes the unemployment rate go down. And then the second one is that of the 240,000 jobs added this month, 230,000 of those were in the 55 to 69 age group. It takes my breath away when I read stats like that.
Well, I'll tell you something. Your listeners should look up U6 unemployment. Go to some search engine and look up U6 unemployment. Yep. If you go to the Labor Department's website, they've got U6, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And U6 includes the most number of groups, and it's twice as high as what you see on television.
And almost exactly. I think I looked at it this morning. It was 11.1, yeah. And it's 5.9 is the unemployment rate now, but 11.1. And you can go to the BLS.gov, Bureau of Labor Statistics.gov, and you can find that.
Yeah. Also, by the way, that number doesn't include 20% of Americans who are self-employed.
That's right.
So it's actually worse than U6. And quite frankly, you know, you're talking about a government and the elections are coming up. I'm 65. I have not ever seen government data be reliable. All government data to me, quite frankly, is closer to propaganda than accurate, or a lot of it is, I'll have to say. So I don't trust any government data.
Well, and these job numbers, too, a job is a job to them. The amount of pay doesn't matter when it comes to the unemployment rate, and a full-time job is the same as a part-time job.
Yeah. They, you know, the Obama administration takes these numbers. They got a bunch of PR guys, and they spin it to look as positive as possible. And they're going to find some way to make it look good, quite frankly. You know, I remember looking at this several years ago, and I believe that number is a phone survey. Did you know that?
Yes.
They get that number of the phone survey. And so clearly anyone that's ever done surveys, they know who to call to get the number that they want to get. So it's not an objective number, in my opinion. It's propaganda, in my opinion.
All right. When you see the equity markets react to what I would consider to be very bad news in the jobs report, not good news. Market goes up, lots of expectation. The expectation is the Federal Reserve is going to stay in and continue to stimulate. Small businesses, how are they doing? Obviously, multinational businesses are doing relatively well. How are small businesses doing in comparison?
Terrible. They're doing terrible. I saw a documentary called Inequality for All a few months ago. And it talks about how the middle class, the buying power of the middle class has gone down dramatically in the last 20 years. So small businesses are doing terrible. And, you know, it sounds kind of funny, but the government is so pro big business that it ends up being what I would call anti-small business. And when you look at federal policies, you see that very clearly. We got some reports a couple of days ago that showed of the top 100 recipients of federal small business contracts, 79 are large businesses. And there was a congressional hearing about 10 days ago, and even Democrats on the House Small Business Committee were raking the head of the SBA over the coals for giving small business contracts to Fortune 500 firms. So when you look at government policies under the Obama administration towards small businesses, I think objectively you would have to say they're anti-small business.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to know how in the world a big business, multinational or even national corporation, gets the benefits that are designed for small businesses. Somebody has to be lying or not doing their job. How does that work?
Well, you hit it on the head there. I'm looking at a story on the internet that says more lies. Watchdog finds government greatly exaggerated success in funding small businesses last year. Yeah, the government's lying. You know, the General Accounting Office does investigations for Congress.
Right.
And I believe their information is accurate. The General Accounting Office issued a report that accused the Small Business Administration of encouraging people to commit fraud. And about 2 weeks ago, the SBA took public comment on a new policy that created a safe harbor from fraud penalties for companies that commit felony contracting fraud to steal federal small business contracts. So if you're caught committing felony contracting fraud, the penalty is 10 years in prison. The Obama administration will let you off if you just claim that you acted in good faith. So they basically legalized felony failed contracting fraud, which will hurt small businesses, divert more small business contracts to Fortune 500 firms. Another policy they came out with just this week, if you're in the IT industry, so if you're selling computer products and you do over $27.5 million, the Obama administration is going to change that definition, and you will be a large business. And at the same time, federal contracts to Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop, and Raytheon will be reported as small business contracts. And that was in a congressional hearing. That's not me. That was in a congressional hearing. So if you're the computer business, you need to look at this, because Obama's going to turn you into a big business if you do over $27.5 million, and at the same time report contracts to Fortune 500 firms like Lockheed Boeing, Northrop, Raytheon as small business awards.
And $25 million in revenue, if you're in a low-margin business, is not that that difficult to do at all. That you're not a rich man. You're not a wealthy man. If you
Quite frankly, in the IT industry, and you're selling to the government, you're talking about 3% profit. To tell you the truth, if you're doing $25 million, you're not big enough to work with the government, by the way. You couldn't even handle that kind of stuff, But it's just, to me, hypocrisy. The height of hypocrisy that the Small Business Administration is going to adopt a policy to take thousands of legitimate small businesses and put them out of business by classifying them as large businesses, and at the same time, they're going to give contracts to the biggest companies in the world and say those are small business contracts. I can't, I can't think of anything that would be, more, Hypocratic than that.
All right, small businesses are more dramatically affected by the income levels in the country than are big businesses. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yes.
All right, so one thing we have had is, people like to quote the last 15 years, the last 20 years, the truth of the matter is in the last 40 years, adjusted for inflation, real wages of the American worker have not gone up in 40 years, adjusted for inflation. Purchasing power has not gone up at all, and yet prices have gone up. The world around them has gone up. Inflation has gone up. Everything has gone up, but the real wages have not gone up. Debt's gone up. And small businesses are generally very dependent upon debt, and debt is very hard to find for small businesses right now.
Absolutely. Like I said, when you look across the board at government policies towards small businesses, they've been very, very bad for a number of years, and they've gotten particularly worse in the last, 5 or 6 years. And, small business is responsible for half the gross domestic product, half the private sector workforce, and according to the Census Bureau, over 90% of the net new jobs. There's one agency in our government to help small business, that's the SBA. And Obama's been trying to close it for the last 5 or 6 years. He tried to close it by combining with the Department of Commerce, and I stopped him, and Forbes actually played a part in that, and Forbes put out a story that they agree with me that he's trying to close it. And he stopped talking about closing it 48 hours later. He hadn't mentioned it since. But now he's trying to close it with policies. So he's coming up with a series of policies that make large businesses small and small businesses large. Even the Washington Post, which is, I would say, a liberal newspaper, wrote a story a few weeks ago that said overnight the Obama administration made 8,500 large businesses small. J.D. Harrison from the Washington Post wrote that story.
So
liberal media is criticizing Obama's small business policies.
So what do small businesses want? Do they want more government intervention and more fair government support, or would they rather have government just get out of the way?
Well, I think a basic thing would be I think they want what they're supposed to get by law. So the law says, the Small Business Act says, small businesses are supposed to get 23% of all government contracts. That's the largest economic stimulus program for small businesses in U.S. history, and I'll call it the largest economic stimulus program for the middle class in history. 23% of all government contracts, that would be huge for the middle class. And I think all the ones I talk to, they just want what they're supposed to get, and they're not getting it. And all these investigations come out. The inspector general that President Obama appointed at the SBA a few weeks ago, actually on the 24th, put out a report that said that, they defrauded small businesses out of almost $2 billion, in government business. But I think that would be great, just given what they're supposed to get by law. I think small businesses would like to have, better access to capital. I know when they passed the last economic stimulus program, the purpose of that was supposed to increase access to capital for small businesses. And yet within a couple of months after that, stories began to come out in the mainstream media that access to capital actually went down. After the economic stimulus program has passed. But I have to say, there's a lot of bureaucratic paperwork for small businesses. If you have over 50 employees, you've got to comply with all these government regulations. I just wish the government would make up their mind about what a small business is. So they're saying if you do, you know, over 27.5 million, you're going to be a large business. But if you have over 50 employees, you know, you got to comply with all these regulations. But Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop get small business contracts. It's just, you know, they need to make up their mind about what a small business is. But I would just like to see them, you know, give small businesses the percentage of contracts they're supposed to get. It would do more to create jobs than any economic stimulus program that I think has, you know, been adopted in the last, you know, 10 years.
How are small businesses continuing to cope with the big box retailers?
Well, not very well. You know, I actually was from Round Rock, Texas.
Right.
And I remember when the first big box store moved into Round Rock, I used to like to go downtown in Round Rock and shop at the little mom-and-pop stores and the little drugstore and things like that. And I can't think which one it was, but the first big box store moved into Round Rock, Texas, downtown Round Rock, went out of business. You know, you can't compete with it. You can't compete with it.
The reason I ask, because small business used to be the way that you worked your way up from a low-paying job to a better-paying job, and then you worked your way up to owning your own small business, then it became a larger business, and that was the core of America. It's been that way for centuries.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't appear to be that way now.
No. You know, when you think about Fortune 500 firms now, they were all small businesses. You know, AT&T was a small business, right? IBM was a small business.
Sure.
You know, Apple, Dell, you know, Hewlett-Packard was started in their garage, right?
Right.
Federal Express was a small, you know, Federal Express got started with an SBA loan.
That's exactly
right.
But
that's not happening anymore. That's, you know, that type of environment is not happening anymore. I saw a report about 6 months ago that showed that the number of small businesses that are started, they're starting every year, at an all-time low. So any statistic that you look at, you know, around small businesses shows, you know, that they're suffering. And it's a political environment, quite frankly.
And that's the cap. That's the upward mobility that middle America needs to have. A better paying job is not upward mobility in America, because those jobs are expendable. Your job, not you, but jobs in general are expendable. You have some control over your own small business. You can hire people. You can enhance the economy. You can enhance the local economy. And I don't think people in Washington remember what it was like to have a country full of small businesses and have big boxes be an unusual, an anomaly.
Absolutely. Again, I think, you know, I was surprised many years ago when I saw that small businesses are responsible for over 90% of net new jobs. The Kauffman Foundation did a study about 3 years ago that said small businesses are responsible for 100% of net new jobs since 1980. And 90% of U.S. exporters are small businesses. So half the gross domestic product, half the private sector workforce, 90% of exporters, 90% of net new jobs. You think America would have huge, you know, campaigns to help small businesses? In reality, the Small Business Administration budget is it's less than $1 billion a year.
Yeah, amazing.
And that agency should have a budget of $10 billion a year. But
I look at something like Obamacare too. That all these government regulations fall disproportionately more difficult for small businesses to manage, because if there is more margin to work with, more dollars to work with, you can hide a lot of sins. If you're a private company and you can raise capital, you can hide a lot of sins.
I'm ashamed to say that I endorsed President Obama. I worked on his campaign. I met him. I talked with him.
Okay.
And I thought he was going to be very pro-small business.
Are you cleansing your soul right now by telling me this?
I'm cleansing my soul. Boy, was I wrong.
Did you vote for him twice?
No.
Okay.
But I tell you what, you know, I talked to the guy, and I thought he was going to be great for small business. He's the most, you know, anti-small business administration in history. One of the first things he did, by the way, was to remove the parent company Dun & Bradstreet number from the government's database of suppliers.
Really?
Now, why would you do that? You know, why would you do that? They're trying to make it harder for federal investigators to uncover fraud and make it easier for large businesses to misrepresent themselves and get these contracts. Think about the connection between this. So the Obama administration removed the parent company Dun & Bradstreet number from the government's database of small businesses, so you can't tell if a company's a legitimate small business or a subsidiary of a Fortune 500 firm. And then last week, they proposed a policy to create a safe harbor from fraud penalties for companies that misrepresent themselves to small businesses to hijack government small business contracts. Put those together.
Yeah.
How about the GEO investigation that accused the SBA of encouraging people to commit fraud? So clearly there's a pattern of the Obama administration adopting policies that I can only characterize as anti-small business.
Yeah, and there's the smoking gun about why the major corporations are being able to take advantage of these small business incentives right there, is the not only total lack of supervision, but a wink, wink, nod, nod, and say, go get it, boys. It's all yours for the taking.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that's absolutely true. And actually, they're making a documentary about this, and people can look at it on YouTube under Lloyd Chapman Documentary. And we're going to put a feature-length documentary together about fraud in government contracting, the SBA and the Pentagon. It should be finished about this time next year. But it's been on the news off and on for a decade. And there's been 25 investigations about it, but nothing's happening. The only thing that's happening is it's getting worse. And the government has moved to reduce transparency in this in a pretty significant way.
Lloyd Chapman, I appreciate it very much. Founder and president of the American Small Business League. Go to the website, ABSL, ABSL.
It's ASBL.
Oh, I'm sorry. I read that wrong. ASBL, ASBL. My God, I think dyslexia set in for just a minute there. ASBL.com. And Lloyd, it's always a pleasure having you on, my friend. Keep up the good fight.
Dan, thanks a lot.
All right, brother. God bless.
All right. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Danny Stewart with Norim Asset and today's last edition of Your Money. Hi, buddy. How are you?
Hey, Dan. Good interview. I like that. I like that a lot. And if you got any dyslexia, I know a good school you can go to.
Yeah, I know. I'm learning this from you, my guy.
Yeah. I got a real good school. They'll test you. Whole nine yards, man. They're right down the street. Anyway, the unemployment rate is officially 5.9%, and non-farm payrolls grew, beating estimates, and all the revisions from the last prior months were also up. Now, you and Lloyd talked about why that is or isn't true and whether the numbers are a big fat lie or not. Well, when it comes down to the markets, it doesn't matter. Price and volume is a great arbiter, and that's what matters. And we need to see what the markets are telling us. Now, whether the investors really believe those numbers or whether they don't believe the numbers and therefore they don't think Janet Yellen will raise interest rates anytime soon, and that's the reason for the rally. Well, again, it doesn't matter. The whole point is the market rallied today, Friday. Now, the whole Monday through Thursday was a bloodbath. Market sold off, and it was very, very weak. So you need to pay attention because this could be just a bounce up to resistance. We're going to be waiting till next – Tim and I are going to be waiting till next Tuesday, Monday and Tuesday to see how things work out. But I will say this, the dollar has been getting stronger. The trend is still up. And so for any of you buying paper oil or paper gold or anything like that, any commodities, you need to wait till you see a reversal in trend and the market, those markets strengthening. Because right now the trend is clearly down. If you're buying physical precious metals to hedge your portfolio, now you may be getting a good opportunity. That may be a good buy point. But for any paper commodity assets, the commodity crush is still on due to the strong dollar. If you've got any questions or comments, you can call me, Danny Stewart, at 855-REAL-WEALTH. Again, that's 855-REAL-WEALTH. And if you want to go to noramasset.com, you can sign up for our video that my chief strategist, Tim Razor, puts together. And we're actually he's going to be doing a long one this evening that'll coincide with our radio show tomorrow from 10 to 11. Just go to noramasset.com, or you can go to the TuneIn app on your iPhone and download it, and you can listen to us on your smartphone, and our video goes along with the show, and we'll be going over all of this in great detail, what I just said, as well as a few new stocks on our watch list.
All right, Danny, we appreciate it very much. You and Tim have a great weekend. Danny Stewart with Norim Asset Management. Did we get all the contact information? Did we get the phone number and everything, Danny?
You did, and thank you. Yeah, 855-REAL-WEALTH. If you want to talk stocks, noramasset.com for the newsletter and to listen to our show. Dan, you have a good weekend too, brother.
Thanks, buddy. You take care of yourself. Hey, I hope that you will all stick around for this very next segment. Sergeant Christopher Dyer is going to be with us. He is a staff sergeant for the Dallas County Sheriffs, but he's president of the Dallas County Sheriffs Association, and we are fortunate enough to have him on the show. He wants to discuss the safety of his officers in the midst of this Ebola crisis and how he thinks that they are not as safe as they should be. And he's in favor of the federal government taking more control of this situation. So it's going to be a real pleasure talking to Sergeant Dyer. Stick around. We'll be right back after this break.
From the North Texas Traffic Center, this report brought to you by the Foundation for a Better Life. In Dallas, we have an accident off to the shoulder, westbound 30 between Hampton Road and Loop 12 Walton Walker. We are seeing stop-and-go delays. Also, road construction delays in Dallas, northbound 35 between Medical District Drive and Frankfort Road. Weather for big delays due to construction, eastbound 20 between Ranger Highway and FM 1884. Also, traffic signal issues continue to plague North Texas due to yesterday's severe weather. I'm Anna DeHaro with your DFW traffic.
While many rose up with violence, he sat down for peace. Mahatma Gandhi reached out with the strength he cultivated within his soul. So, pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Join 1190 AM at the 24th Annual Life Walk, Sunday, October 5th at Lee Park in Dallas. The 5K Fun Run and Walk raises funds and awareness for thousands of North Texans affected by HIV and AIDS. Enjoy food trucks, family activities, pet adoptions, and more. Visit lifewalk.org to sign up today.
Central banks guarantee that inflation is in the cards. Risks have never been greater and yields have never been lower. How do you ensure your financial future? Gold and silver, especially at today's lower prices, are the best investment insurance you can buy. For 5,000 years, gold has been a vessel of wealth preservation over all other investments. Invest in the real wealth that is gold bullion. We're the Metals Vault. We provide outstanding pricing and service that is second to none. Call us today at 855-REAL-WEALTH. That's the Metals Vault. 855 Real Wealth, a proud sponsor of the Dan Kofall Show.
From the Mini Cooper Weather Center, cooler temperatures tonight with a low of 53. Tomorrow, sunny with a high in the upper 70s. This report is brought to you by Reebok Spartan Race.
Reebok Spartan Race is coming to Dallas on November 1st to Rough Creek Lodge. The Reebok Spartan Race was voted the best obstacle race in the world. Get started at SpartanRace.com. Use promo code RADIO and save $15. Reebok Spartan Race. You'll know at the finish line.
This is the Dan Kofall Show.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. So many men.
Hey, do me a favor. Check under your seat or check under your floor mats or under your desk right now. Just check and see. If you've got a spare North Korean leader, North Korea is missing a leader right now.
There's definitely one missing.
Yes, one missing, and he may have rolled underneath your desk. So check it and see. North Korea would like their leader back. There's a possible coup going on in North Korea as we speak. So we have a missing leader in North Korea. I'm sorry, it makes me laugh.
Well, I don't think he's here.
Huh?
I don't think he's here. I think we're in the clear.
Yeah. You never know. You never know. He's, you know, he loves basketball. Dallas is a great place for basketball. You never know. Yeah.
When you're right, you're right.
Yeah. And he figured, I'll just come to the place where everybody has Ebola, and I'll just fit right in. All right. Welcome back to the Dan Kofall Show. Very, very nice to have you. 877-326-3255. If you'd like to join us for this segment, dankofall.com is the website. Thank you all again very much. We have Sergeant Christopher Dyer with us right now. Very pleased to have the sergeant with us. Staff Sergeant for the Dallas County Sheriffs, also president of the Dallas County Sheriffs Association, a 28-year veteran with the Dallas County Sheriff's Office, 7 years as sergeant with the Traffic Division, but most importantly, he is president of the Dallas County Sheriffs Association. And he has the ability to not only the ability, but the charge to be concerned for his team and to try to get some answers for his team. Sergeant, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you very much.
Hi, Dan. So good talking to you.
All right, brother. Talk to me about the concerns you have for your officers during this whole Ebola crisis.
Well, you know, first and foremost, as the president of the association, my main goal is to look after the deputies, and I want to make sure that the Sheriff's Department and Dallas County does everything that they can to alleviate any kind of fears that these guys have about any kind of cross-contamination. And basically that they step up and they take care of the guys.
Right. So we saw the failures at Presbyterian Hospital. We saw the lack of communication from the folks in admissions to the folks that treated him. The gentleman was released. It became a huge issue, and a lot of the first responders were not informed. The ambulance driver wasn't informed. A lot of the people that should have known were not informed. Are you concerned that you and the Dallas County Sheriffs are not getting information in a timely manner?
Well, initially, there was no information. I received a phone call just shortly after going to work and said, you know, send two deputies up here to this location. And that's about as much information that I got. I had a few questions, got a few answers to it. But, you know, realistically, this is not a law enforcement issue. This is a medical issue that needs to be dealt with by the federal government. The CDC should have come in here. They should have taken control of the situation. They've got the knowledge and the resources to take care of it. A few deputy sheriffs are not the people that you want to send in to handle this.
No, and the CDC should have stepped in when the southern border of the United States, when we left our gates wide open, and they were talking about bringing people in, distributing them all over the country, and testing the people for diseases. Clearly, it looks like Ebola didn't come in through our southern borders, but other diseases are coming in, and it is rampant across our southern borders, and the CDC did not a damn thing.
Well, you know, right now, This all got started by all of us that were at the scene. We got a phone call that says, "Hey, take your uniforms off, take your boots off, throw them in a bag." Okay, we just pulled all of your squad cars out of service. We're going to quarantine them.
Wow.
It's like, hey, wait a minute. Okay, you're going to pull the cars out and quarantine them. What about the deputies?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, anybody that gets that phone call, they're going to be extremely concerned for themselves. They've already gone home. They've already been in contact with their families. All of these guys are really concerned. Their families are upset. So, you know, I had a meeting today, called together everybody, got them in. We got up there with Zach Thompson, the head of Health and Human Services for Dallas County, and Dr. Perkins. They did a really good presentation. It really came together and alleviated a lot of these guys' concerns about cross-contamination.
Do they feel concerned enough to go out and get their own Ebola test?
Well, there is no Ebola test is what we're being told. You're only going to test positive for the virus if you are symptomatic of the virus itself. So there really is no way to test. That's why they do the quarantine. What we have told the guys to do, and what Health and Human Services is telling them to do, is we want you to take your temperature in the morning, take your temperature at night, and just monitor that way. As long as you're not showing any symptoms, then you're not going to be contagious.
Boy, that's such a fine line from the point in time that you have been infected to the time you show symptoms. You could become symptomatic in the middle of the night and spread it to all the people in your house. You could. It's possible.
Well, initially we didn't even know how long it had been since that guy was in his apartment.
Right.
Now we're finding out it was about 72 hours. So that really alleviated a lot of their concerns.
Yeah, what I read, though, is the Ebola virus can live 72 hours on a railing, and it can live as many as 7 days out in the wild, as long as it's still sitting in some sort of a human fluid. It's so deceptive by our CDC, where they tell one group of folks one thing and the average American something else, and they completely have left, up until now, law enforcement out of the information cycle.
And that was another area of big concern with everybody, is all of the information and the disinformation, all the contradictory statements from everybody. You know, basically when we found out about this, as supervisors, we jump on our telephones, go to Google, and we're Googling Ebola to find out about it. Because that's really the first time that we even started looking at the virus, was when we got on the CDC website and started reading about it.
Now, I understand you are a proponent of bringing FEMA into this event.
Well, I'm not necessarily a proponent of FEMA. All I'm saying is the federal government has the knowledge and has the resources to handle this a whole lot better than a few deputy sheriffs in Dallas County.
I take it you're not concerned about the overwhelming power that FEMA has to, once it gets its tentacles into something, it has a tendency to stay and control it. I happen to be very concerned about FEMA coming in and doing anything.
I don't know enough about that to really to speak, knowledge about it. You know, really the point is we're not set up to deal with this. Law enforcement isn't set up to deal with a medical issue, and you really need the experts to come in and take care of it.
How are you telling your guys to respond to emergency calls? Surely they're not just rushing in. They've got to have to pause somehow to evaluate the situation.
Well, I guess it would really depend on the type of call that they're going on. But, you know, obviously they're going to have to deal with situations and just deal with it the way that they've always dealt with it. If they start being concerned about what they're going to come in contact, then they're not going to be able to effectively do their jobs.
So what do you see in the very near future? Do you see this situation stabilizing with one patient, or is the information you're getting from the CDC and others leading you to believe that there will be more infections in Dallas?
No, the information that I'm getting is that they believe that they're going to be able to control it here, and that's what I would like to see. That's why I would like them to come in here, take care of the situation. Let's do overkill. I'm perfectly good with overkill. Let's come in here. Let's stop it right here. Let's end it right here in the United States. And then let's do something about keeping it from coming back into our country. And, you know, let's learn from our mistakes this time. The Sheriff's Department needs to learn from its mistakes. Dallas County needs to learn from their mistakes. Let's take this as a lesson. Let's follow our protocols and our procedures, which weren't followed this time. Let's make sure that we do it right the next time.
You know, you are a much more focused man than I. I have great concern. I've never seen a country anywhere have one Ebola infection or one infection of any pathogen as vicious as Ebola is. There are always other infections, and that's it seems so arrogant and so egotistical of our government to say we're going to stop this infection at one. I guess it's I'm just simple-minded. I don't know how they're going to do it, even with their best efforts.
I don't either.
Well, there's an honest answer, my friend. But you want to believe the CDC and you want to believe the government, don't you?
Well, you know, I want to believe that they're better qualified to deal with it than I am.
Yeah, exactly right. Any suggestions you have to the folks in Dallas-Fort Worth on what they can be doing, and if they happen to come across somebody that looks symptomatic? In other words, what should our folks be concerned about? What should they observe?
Well, I think the best advice is if they're concerned about the Ebola virus, they need to get on the CDC website, they need to get on the internet, and they need to research it as much as they can, and try and take as much protection from the virus as possible.
Now, that doesn't mean wearing Tyvek suits around and gloves and everything else, correct? But my question is so simple, yet it's so hard to answer. I'm walking through North Park Mall, right next to where this gentleman lived. If I'm going through North Park Mall, I'm not picking on North Park Mall. They're just unfortunate location. I would be very concerned about touching things, picking things up. I just would. And maybe I'm crazy about that, but at least getting further away from it, I would have some level of comfort the further away I got from that whole 75 75 and Walnut Hill. Is that somewhere in that area? Mm-hmm. Getting further away from that would make me more comfortable. Is that crazy to think that?
Well, you know, I'm no medical expert by any means, but I know what I'm going to tell my family, and what I'm going to tell my family is go back to basic hygiene. Wash your hands.
They didn't issue you your own safety belt with a little holster of Purell and handy wipes in it, did they?
No, unfortunately, when we got there, there was no safety equipment whatsoever. There was no latex gloves. There was not even any hand sanitizer. There was nothing. And that's what I was referring to earlier. The department needs to learn from its mistakes and be better prepared and follow their own protocols and procedures and make sure we do this right if this ever happens again.
You know, the funny thing is that I've always felt that the Dallas County Sheriffs were probably one of the best law enforcement agencies in this part of the country. And you would think that the organization itself would have their act together and say, look, we have a great reputation. We are a frontline, a first responder. Why in the world don't we keep our guys safe? It would seem to me that of all the folks in law enforcement, you guys would have done it best from the start.
Well, Dan, I appreciate that. But again, you know, all it takes is one breakdown. And unfortunately, we had a breakdown in communications and those protocols weren't followed. And that's where we ended up where we were at.
Well, Staff Sergeant Christopher Dyer, we appreciate you coming on, my friend. I know you're busy these days. It's great for you to take that little time out of your day. We'd love to have you come back on as situations change, either better or worse. You're welcome on the show anytime.
Thanks, Dan.
God bless, man. Good information. Like talking to him. I do like the sheriffs. I always like anything called sheriff. Sheriff to me is a good thing. Sheriff to me is a top shelf kind of.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's because I watch too many Westerns, but that's
with everything going on, though, it's still scary to think about being any kind of emergency responder.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so yes. Yeah, this is the one thing where you can't see it, you can't fight
That's right.
it, you can't do anything with it. All right, we're going to come back right after this break. We're going to have our friends from Paws in the City with a few more canine friends, see if we can help find homes for them. We hope that you'll stick around. DanCofal.com and TalkStream Live is a place that you can find us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Rodney Anderson with Supreme Lending. In this real estate market, time is money because most sellers are receiving multiple offers. By having a reputable lender that does FHA, VA, conventional, USDA, and jumbo loans, you will ensure that your transaction closes accurately and on time. If you ask our clients that have closed their purchases with us in as little as 8 to 15 days, they will tell you they pre-approved me quickly, they know what they're doing, and they do what they say they're going to do. We have earned your trust for over 20 years through integrity, experience, efficiency, and accessibility. If you're ready to purchase, then call my office right now to get pre-approved at 1-800-EXPRESS. We are open from 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to 1 on Saturday, and 2 to 3:30 on Sunday. Or apply online at rodneyanderson.com.
Supreme Lending is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 196730. 4975 Preston Park Boulevard, Suite 800, Plano, Texas.
Central banks guarantee that inflation is in the cards. Risks have never been greater and yields have never been lower. How do you ensure your financial future? Gold and silver, especially at today's lower prices, are the best investment insurance you can buy. For 5,000 years, gold has been a vessel of wealth preservation over all other investments. Invest in the real wealth that is gold bullion. We're the Metals Vault. We provide outstanding pricing and service that is second to none. Call us today at 855-REAL-WEALTH. That's the Metals Vault. 855-REAL-WEALTH, a proud sponsor of the Dan Kofal Show.
This is the Dan Kofal Show.
We're just comparing features of the dogs we have in here right now. It's always fun to try to pick what breed they are because I am a big fan of, I don't want to use the word mongrel. That sounds like a really low-class term, but a mixed breed. I'm a big fan of mixed breeds. They seem to me to be the best of all worlds. Welcome back to the Dan Kofal Show. Our good friends with Paws in the City, thank you very much. Paws in the City are with us. And our job today is to try to find homes for these rescue dogs, but these are not just rescue dogs. These dogs have we're also here with Mark Firma. And Mark can give us a better indication, but it's always important to tell our listeners, I think, the process that these dogs go through from the time that you find them until the time that somebody adopts them. Can we go through that real quickly?
Absolutely. Sure. And thanks again, Dan, for having us on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
So the first thing that the first stop for the dogs that we rescue is to the vet, and they're 100% vetted. If there's any issues that need to be taken care of, medical treatment, so forth, we make sure that the dogs are 100% treated and 100% healthy. We also spay or neuter the dog or cat, and we microchip them. And once that takes place, typically they go to a boarding facility, but very quickly after that to a foster home. And at a foster home, they spend time with our experienced fosters, and the added benefit there is that the dog really acclimates itself to a home environment. And
sure.
From there, they go to adoption events and hopefully into somebody's home permanently after that.
How was your event last weekend?
It was very good, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How many dogs did you find homes for?
Nobody actually walks away from an event with a dog.
Oh, no kidding. I would have thought that.
Yeah, well, we take adoption applications.
Oh, that's it.
And then
you've got people have to prove they're good enough for your dogs. I'm good with that.
Yes, they do. And
those headphones are a pain in the butt, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They just fell off. But anyway, from there, what happens is that we process the application and we just make sure that it's going to be a good fit for the, both the person and the dog.
Sure.
And dog or cat. And from you know, we do a home visit and we just make, you know, we're here to adopt dogs, but we just and cats, and we want to get them adopted as fast as possible, but we also make sure it's a good home.
You're kind of the eHarmony of dogs. You take applications, you scan through. I don't know if these people do that or not, but I know you do. You probably do a better job of scanning people than these dating services do.
I've never thought about it that way, but maybe so.
All right, you're going to be tomorrow, you're going to be at the Petco at 5301 Beltline, which is the tollway in Beltline, right up the street from our studio. You're going to be there from 11 until 2. You'll have a number of dogs with us. Let's start off with these two just adorable little things. Let's talk about Camilla, a Chihuahua and a rat terrier. She's not a rat terrier. She's a Karen terrier. I can look at her. I can see that in her face. She's got the fur of a Karen terrier, for God's sake.
I totally agree with you. I'm 100% on board with that.
And I never have liked the word rat terrier because I have people call my dog a ratter because he'll chase everything. And that's the problem with terriers. They chase everything. All right. Chihuahua and a terrier. She's 2 years old, female. She's tan and white. She's absolutely adorable. She's kind of sort of like the dog on The Wizard of Oz. You know, just that was a Karen. So she's close to that. And she's just as friendly and as nice as she can be.
Yes, and so her story is she was at Dallas Animal Services, and she had heartworms.
Right.
And was heartworm positive. She really needed medical treatment urgently. So we pulled her, and we treated her. She's 100% healthy now. And as you can see, I know your listeners can't, but
right.
As you can and describe to it, just very, just a sweet lap dog, friendly, loves to be petted, very affectionate. And she's just a wonderful, wonderful dog. So
I would give anything if my dog was like that.
She's housebroken too. Yeah, it's always a big one for you.
Yeah, that's when I gave up on years ago. We won't tell that sad story anymore.
So
only my rescue dog is completely housebroken.
Right. We have two more here today. So, but anyway, Camilla is just she warms up fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just takes a minute or two for her to really warm up to you And I met her actually for the first time today. So
and she's a small dog, and normally small dogs are a little on the nervous side. She's not the least bit a little nervous over there.
Right. Yeah. She's 9 pounds. She
is
was
she
seven
really?
Pounds when we got her, and she's gained 2 pounds. So she's about the right weight.
So she's about half the size of my Karen. That's about right. That's where the Chihuahua would come in. Okay, I'm getting the whole Chihuahua thing now. Okay, you've got Cosette here too, and Cosette is a Terrier Welsh mix. She's 2 years old, female. Tan and white, and house trained, housebroken?
Absolutely.
Housebroken, there we go. Tell us a little bit about Cosette.
Cosette was also at the same shelter, Dallas Animal Services, and she was on the list to be put down. Dallas Animal Services was overcrowded and maxed out, and we were tracking the dogs that were on that list, and we made sure that we pulled Cosette out of there, out of the shelter to rescue her from that.
How do you pick the dogs that you pull out? I mean, you can't save them all.
We'd love to.
I know.
So, yeah.
Breaks my heart when I think about it.
But you know, there's other rescues too, and there's us, and we're the first thing that we do is before it even gets to the day.
Right.
We're trying to help network market. Market maybe a funny term, but we're just network it.
Sure.
And just try to get exposure to the dogs that are on that list so that maybe they can get adopted before it even gets to that final day. But on the final day, we're in there pulling as many as we can.
Yeah, and you've already told me that on the final day, and this is what I think most dog owners already know, that dogs know it's a final day. They they certainly have this this sense about it, and that amazes me. I don't even have the right words for that. That's very, very unusual.
It is. It's, you know, and we give the term death row, but I mean, it's just kind of like that. I mean, but
a little graveyard humor there. No problem.
Yeah, it is. You definitely kind of they sense that they're just a different attitude when they get to that stage. But they're happy to get out of the shelter, and they're happy to get on their way to a better life.
I think so. It's kind of like somebody being terminated. They kind of know that's their last day. People treat them differently. They don't spend the time walking by their cubicle anymore. They don't get invited to meetings. Subtle little things let you know that you're on a short list. And my guess is the dogs have their own short list. I don't know what it is, but they probably have that, oh, this oh crap short list. Bob, are you on the short list? Yeah, I got no.
And think about also, dogs are so wired to analyze us, you know, love us. I mean, their whole world's around people, right?
Yep.
So, you know, they're going to pick up any little vibes from people.
Yeah, that's just a shame. All right, so we've got Cosette and we have Camilla. How many dogs are you going to have out there tomorrow at the Petco?
We'll have somewhere between probably 10 and 12. So, and we have currently about 70 to 72 dogs that in Paws of the City, all rescues. If there is a dog on the website that someone's really interested in seeing and that dog's not scheduled to attend there, we always try to make arrangements to do a meet and greet, whether it's at that event or another location.
And tell us the website.
It's pawsinthecity.org.
And they can go to that and they can see the dogs that you have right now, correct?
Correct. All of our dogs that are available for adoption and cats. I always focus on the dogs.
I guess I never knew you had cats for adoption.
Yes.
Yeah, really?
We're going to bring some in sometime for you.
That's okay. I don't hate cats, although most people think I hate cats. It's just compared to a dog, they're just not quite the same. They're just different.
Correct. Yeah.
I don't know how to say that without really sounding like a cat hater, but
they are. They're wired differently, that's for sure.
All right. Now, what about if somebody wants to become a foster parent?
They can individual can submit an application via online on our website. We have a place to do that. We're always looking for fosters.
Now, this is all pro bono. You don't pay any of your foster parents,
no,
right? Yeah.
No.
Okay. You got to be prepared to take on a dog for relatively short, hopefully short period of time.
Hopefully short period of time. Can be longer. In fact, here today is one of our fosters. She's actually fostering both of these dogs. Usually when I bring two dogs in, one's being fostered by the foster and one's from somewhere else.
She doesn't have her own headset and microphone right now, but I'm curious what it's like to have these dogs and build a relationship with them and then all of a sudden have somebody adopt them. That's got to be hard. Maybe you can speak for her because we don't have another microphone right
sure.
now.
Sure. Well, I know that, I think, Stacy, you think the same way I do, and you're just looking for a better home. I know recently she had a foster that it was very difficult for her to let go, and she was kind of in tears that day, if I may say so, because I remember that.
Oh, absolutely. And it would take almost no time at all to bond with these sweet dogs that you guys have. It wouldn't take long. And boy, if it was like less than a week, I would have a very hard time getting rid of them. They'd be your buddy in a week. That would be it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell, little one.
But going back to something you said on that, on paying foster, that kind of, there's not one single person at Paws of the City that it is paid anything. We're all volunteer organization.
Right.
So, and what we do for our fosters is we supply all the take care of the medical treatments and that kind of thing, and they supply the food and the love.
Very, very nice. So people can even if they're not going to adopt, they can contribute to Paws in the City, or they could become a foster parent.
Mm-hmm.
They could do a lot to work with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We're always taking donations, so as an all volunteer organization. But there's a lot of ways that you can volunteer your time to the organization. There's a lot of different things that go on. I mean, there's a whole list of things that we detail out on our website.
The dogs that you've been bringing in have all been generally, with a couple exceptions, generally in the 2-year-old range. Do you find that that's kind of sort of a pretty typical age, or?
I think it's just been more coincidental.
Is it
really?
Okay?
Yeah.
And what about older dogs? If somebody wanted a more mature dog, do you have them?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've brought a couple of those in. What I don't bring in a lot is puppies, and the reason is don't really need to. We don't really have a problem adopting out puppies.
See, that's funny. And for me, it'd be just the opposite. Cause I love puppies. Don't get me wrong, but I would really like a dog that was housebroken. I'm telling you, I either need to go to tile or wood floors, and I don't know which. All right, we appreciate it very much. Mark Verma with Paws in the City. The website again is?
is pausingthecity.org, and we also have a very active Facebook page if you're on Facebook.
And you can go find him this Saturday at Petco, 5301 Beltline at the Tollway and Beltline in North Dallas. They'll be there from 11 until 2. Have a great weekend, folks. God bless. We'll see you back here on Monday.
If you're scared, walk away, because there's no need to feel ashamed. Yeah, we all feel the same. I fell in love with rock and roll until I found it was false. It plastered on our face for me.